Welcome to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. This show's mission is to give you the knowledge, tools, and power to achieve success, whether you're starting a small business or already have one. I'm Jack Mancini, and I'm here with my business partner, Adam Sunholder.
Each week, we'll be talking business, small business, or drawing on our collective experience of having owned and operated 20 small companies and coached and advised hundreds more. Dirty Secrets of Small Business will debunk the common myths of business ownership, expose the impact of government regulation, share small business success stories, and reveal the dirty secrets of small business.
Our show is brought to you by Maximum Value Partners, MVP. We do the heavy lifting of analyzing your business with you to identify what's working or not working, and then coach you to implement and engage the right resources to help your business thrive. Along the way, we're your partners. You'll be doing the work, and we'll be there 24/7 to coach you and chart your path to success. Okay, in today's show, we're going to be focusing on four prime segments and a couple of other little segments here. And what those four common, or the four prime are, is common myths of small business ownership. That's the first one. Dirty secret of the week. How come? It's a question, how come, in which I'm going to throw something out at you, sort of perplexed about the world around us. How come this or that exists and or is happening? The fourth one is small business success stories. These come from our MVP clients. And they utilize the seven keys to success, which as we go forward, you're going to learn more and more about those. And we have time to put in current events, regulations impacting small business, unpolitically correct thought. We try to weave those through our discussion during the day.
Now, we invite you to call with any questions. Now, don't be shy or embarrassed. Chances are the question you ask is probably the same one that somebody else is afraid to ask. So call us here at 440-946-9468. That's 440-946-WINT. As we get into our first segment here of our common myth, I'm always reminded we need to remind folks what we mean when we say small business. Because we use that phrase small business coaching.
Yeah, good point.
And we, you know, or small business coaches, because we aren't small guys. But the small business in our world is 1 to 25 employees. That's what we're talking about here. And there's about 6 million of those here in the country of the United States. They're all over the place. And chances are you've used one, worked for one, seen one in the last week, guaranteed almost. They're all over the place. And that's our bread and butter, the folks we love to work with.
We love to work with them. We have to make that point because so many people don't like to work with that segment of the small business world. We do. They're what make the country great, and they're just, when picked right, they're the greatest people in the world to coach.
All right, so our common myth this week, this is one that we had, you know, we thought was true when we first started Maximum Value Partners, and that is that lawyers and CPAs are good sources of advice for your business. Now, when we first started out, we said, hey, we know a lot of attorneys, a lot of CPAs. They all have small business, you know, clients, right? They can help us.
I remember that well. In fact, everyone who's going into consulting or advising in some capacity always starts with, hey, I'm going to talk to my lawyer and or talk to lots of lawyers and CPAs because they have a lot of clients that I'm sure I could consult with.
Right.
That's what we thought, too, 13 years ago.
Yeah, and we had this great plan put together in our wisdom to go market to all these folks. And we put together this dog and pony show. You know, Jack and I aren't really PowerPoint guys. We're really kind of more flip chart and whiteboard kind of guys. But we went through the excruciating pain of putting together a PowerPoint presentation. That was pretty good. We're pretty happy with it. And we figured that would be the key to our success here. And as we started talking to all these folks, what happened was our first set of lawyers we talked to, and wouldn't you know it, the next day, got that phone call. Here it is. Here's our first client. Said, "Why are we so smart?" High-fiving each other, saying, "Yeah, we're the smartest guys," patting ourselves on the back, right? Well, we did about 30 of those dog and pony shows. Problem was, the only client we got was from that first presentation. And, you know, Jack and I are very critical of ourselves, and we started looking at each other and saying, okay, well, what are we doing wrong here? You know, what are we missing? And what we've learned over the years is that while many CPAs and lawyers and bankers and insurance folks, you name it, feel they do a version of coaching. You know, it's one of those things people feel that, hey, I can be a coach. Anybody can be a coach. It's almost like people listen to the radio, say, I can get in front of a microphone and start talking. How difficult can that be, right? Well, same thing we see with a coaching standpoint. But one of the challenges you have is the kind of advice that the clients we're talking about, those small businesses, those 1 to 25 employees need, is some real practical advice. Not advice from folks like CPAs or agents of the government that are there because there are taxation laws that are in place that require them to be there, or all the legal regulations that are out there that you need from a legal standpoint. But somebody is giving true practical advice. And so here's one of the questions, and CPAs are amazed when they hear this, okay? One of the questions we'll ask our new clients, or even people that we meet that own companies, if you didn't have to pay taxes, what would you talk to your CPA about? Now we get what? Blank stares back.
They say, always blank stares.
They say, what do you mean? Now it gives you a sense of the gap between, and not the GAAP gap that accountants talk about, but the gap in terms of
GAAP.
Right, the generally accepted accounting principles for our listening audience. I know you know, Jack, with your accounting background. But the chasm that exists, how about that's a better word, between what the CPAs feel that they're delivering in terms of advice and what the owner values as advice. That if they didn't have to pay taxes, 99 out of 100 small business owners cannot tell you what they would talk to their CPA about. So that tells us is they aren't giving them good advice or good guidance, Jack.
Well, it really boils down to the fact that it's really not their business. Their business is being, as you just said, an agent of the government. In effect, that's how we look at them. They prepare tax returns. That's the biggest job that they do. They might help on some valuations, things of that nature, but to advise small business owners, 1 to 25, that isn't their business. Most professional advisors like that cannot see that market as being something that's profitable to them for the most part. So to Adam's point again, if it weren't for taxes, the relationship would be very dubious. And we look at well-intentioned people who will, in fact, I was reading an article this morning talking about if you're going to start a small business, there are three people that you have to know. You have to know a good lawyer, a good accountant, and a good insurance agent. And after all these years, I still scratch my head. My bald head gets ruts in it every once in a while if I read too many of those articles. It's, what about a business coach? What about a real trusted advisor who gets down there with you and works with you?
Yeah, that's to your point, Jack. They're very good from the compliance standpoint for a lot of them, and they have some experience. And most owners think, hey, they have a lot of small business clients like me, so they must know what's kind of going on. But I look back to my days as an investment banker. I come parachuting in and help people package up their companies and write the story about it and sell them and value them and everything else. But heck, if they toss me the keys of the company, forget about it. That's not what I was trained to do. And I think it's true, too. You know, ask yourself that question. Would you toss your keys to your company, to your CPA or your lawyer?
I sure wouldn't
either. Most people,
never.
Now, there's few and far between that are okay, but the vast majority don't fit that bill. And most of the clients think that that's the case. And so we got to make sure that we debunk that myth. If you're coming to your CPA, your lawyer, for that kind of good basic business advice, you're using them incorrectly. And they will not tell you that because it's almost, you know, it's something they take out of them in law school. They can't say no.
Well, I don't think they even realize it, Adam. And really, it took us 2 years to be able to speak the language properly to a small business owner. And I don't think many advisors outside of guys like us really get it.
That's very true. All right, so let's debunk that myth in terms of you know, calling your CPA, your attorney for that kind of advice. And as we come back here, we've got coming up will be our dirty secret of the week. So I'm Adam Sunhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners. We'll be there 24/7 to coach you and chart your path to business success.
Two of us girls, you know.
Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners, MVP. We're your small business coaches. We understand that larger companies don't have the same challenges that smaller businesses face on a daily basis. So we have made it our passion to understand what makes small businesses work.
All right. In this segment, we're going to talk about our dirty secret of the week. We're going to reveal that dirty secret here in a moment. All right. So, it's the time of our show, we'd like to reveal our dirty secret of the week. And this one is one that's probably near and dear to the hearts of many of our D's out there. D's are, in terms of DISC that we use, is a behavior assessment, D-I-S-C. D's are those folks that are kind of the driving, demanding, dominating types that just keep on pushing and pushing. So this one's near and dear to their heart, this dirty secret is, Jack, and that is it never happens as fast as you'd like.
That's a truism, Adam. Definitely.
So these D's, like I said, especially for those folks, they're always pushing. They're always ahead. They're always worried about what's next and making things try to happen. And when you're in business, you have great ideas all times of the day or the night, but it never kind of goes as fast as you'd like. So we have a lot of clients who are like that. We have one in particular that I'm thinking about with this segment where he's grown quite a bit. Matter of fact, in the last 5 years alone, grown from a $250,000 business to approaching $7 million. It's a pretty big growth number.
It sure is.
And he's still not happy with that. He's still pushing. And you know, what happens is you got to make sure you got things in the right order to make to be able to support that kind of growth. But trying to be patient and not every opportunity you want to be able to say yes to. Because we've seen, and you see it out there too, a lot of companies that literally grow out of business. Not go, but grow with an R, grow out of business. And that's what happens when it goes too fast sometimes.
Well, growing a successful business rarely happens overnight. But people who don't know will use that great term. Boy, Adam was pretty lucky with his business. He's an overnight success. Let me tell you a few things about overnight successes. You know, there's lots of frustration in growing a business. Tons of work, a desire to quit more often than not. And again, what we do with our coaching is to help people inspire them and kind of stay with it, especially, obviously, when they're making progress. Don't quit too soon. A guy like Seth Godin,
sure.
He became an overnight success from his audience after 6 years of grinding. A couple other names you've heard about, Microsoft, 11 years from the start to the time that they got those big billions of dollars. Apple, 20 years. Google, 8 years. Facebook, 5 years. And the one that kind of surprised me in this article that I was reading, Amazon, 3 years to hit the golden goose. That's pretty quick time. But nonetheless, overnight success. People think, hey, I can start a business and I can start it and I'm going to start to make money on it and things are going to fall into place within a year. Rarely happens like that. So you got to pull your boots on and expect a long grind with lots of frustration. And if you're made for this, and we have ways to determine that, but if you're made for this, you will be what some people on the outside would call an overnight success.
Well, and I don't think it happens. It may be a cultural thing too, Jack. You know, I was reading a book a few years back and it talked about Coach John Wooden. Now, for those of you who don't know, John Wooden was a great basketball coach with UCLA. And his first championship, I believe it took 15 years, give or take, a couple of years, okay? 15 years. Now, this is a guy who, you know, they won, what, like 8 out of 10 championships back in the 60s
and 70s? Oh, yeah.
Some
huge
crazy
run.
Number, right? He had guys like Lou Alcindor, better known as Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Bill Walton, and a bunch of just great players. But it took him, you know, the better part of over a decade to get to that success level. Now, do you think that anybody would have that kind of patience today to let a guy, you know, a John Wooden evolve like that?
Can't see that at all.
Right,
I mean, what a relic,
right.
You know?
So I think that tends to permeate our lives at all levels, including our business lives, where, again, we want everything today. You know, we had a client been a client of ours now for about 3.5 years or 4 years. And when we first started with him, he was pretty early in his business career. And he wasn't aware of this whole idea yet that, you know, things don't happen as fast as you like. And so he came in and we're getting him to present his profit plan for the first time. That profit plan is where you forecast out your sales by month and your expenses and your profit to show that you're going to make money, right? So our client came in all excited. And he had, what was it, 18 lines of revenue, Jack? I think it was 18. Now, he had actually brought in money on two or three of those at this point. So we said, let's negotiate here a little bit. We're going to let you have three or four of those. The other 14, we're going to put them aside for right now. Because there is absolutely no way, even though these all sound great, how you're going to be able to focus on 18 different lines of revenue and be able to make any money here. Let's focus on one, two, three, or four of these things that are the most likely to happen and make those things start to happen. Now, here we are 4 years later, and he's made a couple, between those four we started with, he's made three of those work pretty good. And some of those other 18 are now coming off the shelf. They're coming out of hibernation. They haven't gone away. I mean, I think one of the things we try to tell our clients here, Jack, and you know, the owners out there, is it's rare that you've got these once in a lifetime opportunities that come. All right, things will keep coming. If you're doing well, opportunities
can be put on the shelf and as they should be. You know, the only way that if you have a lot of good business knowledge and you have a track record of dealing with small businesses successfully, you have a chance of accelerating the process to have what we would call a successful business going. But if you don't have that knowledge and you have so much to learn, it's very difficult to accelerate. You can't. You just have to stay down in the weeds for a while and basically learn a lot of stuff about business. And another thing, if you want to accelerate the growth of a small business, all two worlds of difference. One is a startup and one is acquiring a small business. A startup is the most difficult business challenge that you can take on because everything is uncertain for the most part. Where buying a company, and it's surprising, and we've helped a number of people buy companies with little or no money down, but buying a small company, you can take the history of both the pluses and minuses of that history and incorporate it into a plan, still requiring knowledge, but certainly accelerating the process of having a growing, successful business.
Yeah, that's one of the ways people do that. And I know, you know, we personally experienced this. We have to, you know, when we talk about some of these myths and our dirty secrets and that, these aren't just things that Jack and I are on the outside pontificating about. We live through all these things, okay? And one of the things we've been struggling with for the last 4 years, 5 years now, Jack, is trying to find a good marketing team for us, okay? And so it's taken us a while. We didn't just wake up one morning and get on the radio here. It's taken us years to do different things that we're trying to do. It's finding good people to help make those things kind of happen. And we wanted it to happen, snap our fingers, and bam, here it is. And
as do most people. Yeah. I'm going to hire you, Adam, and I expect results tomorrow.
Yeah, we're very optimistic, positive guys, right? So everybody we meet, we feel is going to be the right person. We vet them pretty well. We bring them on board, and unfortunately, people often will disappoint, or they'll be good for getting us over a hump or getting us that next step, but it's not enough to kind of take us where we want to go. And so we've had to learn to not give up that fight, you know, to keep going. And finding those good people is a big part of it, no matter what your organization, in terms of what we're talking about here for us, for our marketing piece, but for any organization, having those good people and finding them and not giving up, not settling. We have so many discussions with our clients about settling. Well, gee, I'm going to bring this person in, even though they don't do A or B.
I've been looking for a year now, and I've been through three, and they aren't,
And we say, stop. It's absolute insanity. So you aren't going to get there faster by bringing the wrong people on board. You got to have the right people on board.
It works exactly the opposite, Adam. You know, you bring that wrong person on, the time up front going through that process, the damage that person has done to the company, and then the time to, you know, talk about, you know, wringing your hands and finally getting rid of them. It's a very costly process, impacting negatively on the company.
Yeah, the time to train, not only to hire, to train, and then your point, if they don't work out, then as we talked about in prior shows, in terms of having to go fire that person, usually doesn't happen as fast as you'd like, right? So all of a sudden, you have all this time and effort. That's part of what kind of drags you down. And so, yeah, if you start to look at other options in terms of, you know, you can go buy a company versus starting something else, they're out there. That's a big part of how, you know, the one client I mentioned early on here had grown pretty quickly. Actually went out and acquired companies.
That's right, and that'll do it. And it's a good way to go. It really is. You have everything in front of you. You can assess it quickly, and that's a fast road to growth, if done right. You got to buy them right. That's another story for another day.
Right. So that's part of what we do. We'll reinforce, you know, some of our clients need that little kick in the buttinsky to get them moving, but a lot of them, it's more about us taking them and pulling the reins in, kind of slowing them down a little bit. And, you know, as crazy as that might sound, say, hey, just kind of add some calmness to it. Don't make things go all hectic. And let's do this in a way that's, we're going to grow, but it's sustainable growth, not just this crazy growth or keep pushing. Because eventually you're going to wear the organization or wear yourself out. So it's very important to keep that in mind. And again, that's that need or the desire to have it happen so fast, or to be keep pushing and pushing to where, you know, things aren't going to happen as fast as you think that they're going to happen.
They never do, unfortunately. They never do. We're rarely surprised with being way ahead of schedule.
Right, and if we do, it's often it's a false sense of security, right?
Yeah,
it doesn't
last. There's a problem we missed somewhere.
Right, so it's not sustainable, right? So keep that stuff in mind. Again, if that's something that's been frustrating you, it's not just you. You aren't the only one who's wrestling with that. That's not the only thing that you're the only person where that's bothering you. So it won't always happen as fast as you'd like, but keep pushing and don't give up.
Don't give up is key.
That's
absolutely
key. That's key for this. All right. So stay tuned. In our next segment, we'll be coming back for our How Come segment. We'll get the chance to see what's on Jack's mind. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners. We'll be there 24/7 to coach you and chart your path to business success.
Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners, MVP. We're your small business coaches. We understand that larger companies don't have the same challenges that smaller businesses face on a daily basis. So we have made it our passion to understand what makes small businesses work.
All right. This is our segment, our How Come segment, with the question mark after it, where we have questions that kind of boggle our mind, and we're going to explore Jack's brain here a little bit, which can be scary at times, but should be very interesting nonetheless. All right, Jack, what's on your mind today?
Okay, what's on my mind today came out of today's paper. How come a plaintiff attorney can pocket $25 million in a settled class action lawsuit with Uber and their drivers? And that settlement was for $84 million. In other words, this plaintiff attorney gets 25 of the $84 million. According to the Wall Street article, the settlement covers 385,000 drivers in California and Massachusetts. This guy was from Boston, by the way, this attorney. And they claim that they were misclassified as independent contractors. Now, Uber, let me ramble here a little bit. Uber, in the settlement here, keeps its business model by settling. The drivers remain independent contractors, which, by the way, kind of really pissed off the Teamsters Union. And a few minor changes were made to the process that, you know, their process of reimbursement and scheduling.
So is that protection money for them?
Well, the Wall Street Journal, let me look a little further into this here.
All right.
The big news is that the plaintiff attorney from Boston keeps the 25 of the $84 million. The Wall Street Journal referred to this whole situation as an Uber shakedown.
Oh,
now, there's other clients, basically, who, not clients of ours, but there are other small businesses who are wrapped up, as they said in this article. There's probably another 8 to 12 small businesses like this, all the Ubers and small, but companies that are literally being put out of business because they can't pay that ransom. And that's what it appears to be. it just doesn't hit me. And I'm going to say, how come something like that can exist?
Wait, so let me make sure I understand. So you're saying that it's almost a different how come question as you're talking about it here. It's they had to pay $84 million?
The settlement, Uber paid $84
million. To keep their business model as is.
That's exactly what happened. Rather than go to trial. Huh. And going to trial, since the trial would be held in San Francisco, where this was the biggest charge in California, everyone in San Francisco loves Uber. So the chances of prevailing in San Francisco would have been lower.
Okay.
So why did he settle? Well, he settled because he had to get out of town, in effect. Or at least that's what it appears.
All right.
So it seems to me that that's unjust compensation and seems to be using the system for personal gain versus justice. And I say that because the remaining of the 84, when distributed to 385,000 employees, comes out to about $150 each. And okay, that's not a lot of money compared with the other side, who kind of used the process and is getting $25 million.
How much is that a piece? 100 what?
$153.
So you can park your car for a day in Frisco, maybe buy a cup of coffee, and I don't know if
for you people,
a loaf of sourdough bread or something. I don't think that's not a lot.
Not a lot. But I don't know if you've ever been part of a class action lawsuit and being on the receiving end, maybe for airlines during the heyday of the airlines being sued constantly for a variety of things.
That, phone companies, different things. Yeah, I mean, it was all...
The lawyers would get tens of millions, maybe more, hundreds of millions perhaps. And what would we get? We'd get a string of coupons that had to be used in 6 months, or they void out, and maybe worth a few $100.
Now, wait a minute. Let me play devil's advocate here now. Come on. They're putting all their resources to bear to this and not getting paid anything. And if they don't win, they get nothing.
That's right.
And so, okay, so how many Uber-like cases do you think these lawyers had?
I think a plaintiff's attorney like this company in Boston, they have 15 in the waiting at least for various reasons here, and that's how they make their money. I like the Wall Street Journal a lot. They seem very intelligent, and they cover cases very well. So when they draw opinions, I generally side with their opinions. So this company is, I feel, when I look at it, abusive. It's too much money to pay out to them versus what the people who are supposedly grieved are getting. So how do you balance that?
Well,
couldn't they get 1% of the settlement?
Yeah, well,
why shouldn't they?
I'm more intrigued by the question of, you got to pay that, what do you call it, the Uber Shakedown. Uber Shakedown. I'll say Uber Ransom. Uber Shakedown. Uber something. They got to pay $84 million.
Uber does.
Yeah, to keep their business model.
Keep things going the way they were.
So what does that say, though? They're saying that the model's okay if you can pay me a big check.
That's right. You hit it right on the head.
Okay. Well, to me, that's more... How come that makes any sense?
is it fair?
This is a settlement. This is not like a judge doing this. This is just a settlement. It's not a court settlement.
They wanted to settle quickly. They didn't want to go to trial.
Well, as we know, we've talked about with numerous lawyers over the years, there's less than 5% of cases actually go see a courtroom, right? So almost everything's settles.
They rarely make it.
All right, so Uber's making some pretty good money, then, they're saying, or they have backers are saying, hey, now what? So this is going to grandfather. Now, are they good for good now? They're good forever. They don't have to ever fight this fight again.
No, they have to. If
and what do you get for $84 million?
Public, there has to be another dip into the well too.
More money?
$20 million. That's right.
Boy, $84 million doesn't get what it used to in the day, right? That doesn't go very far anymore. 84 is a pretty big number. How many zero? I got that's a nine. Wait, 10-figure number, right?
Is it? You're the guy with the numbers. That's right.
It's a lot. 11 figures. Oh, that's a lot of figures. That's a lot of numbers. That's a lot of...
So the whole part, how come that's the perception and its reality, that the legal system can use the system that is ours collectively and get such obviously tremendous wealth from that? Why should that be? That's I'm perplexed with that. How come that exists in this country?
You're making me want to take an Uber now and talk to one of those drivers. Was it every? You said 300-some thousand drivers.
So it was Massachusetts and California.
Oh, okay, so it wasn't all the drivers. Just those two states.
That's right. There might be some more.
I was going to say that if they're out there writing checks, the folks in Florida and Ohio and Michigan and in Texas, wherever else you've got Uber guys, they're going to say, hey, "Where's mine?"
That's right. So, you know, the Wall Street calls it a shakedown. Interesting word, fun word, and it seems like a realistic word. It's certainly perception. Somebody on that receiving end of $25 million doesn't seem to be working too hard to try to neutralize that. So give me more. Give me more. I deserve more. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm hearing.
That'd be a pretty short case, too, right? Because Uber hasn't been around that long.
That's right. Now, so if I were a guy, I'd probably, if it were me, if I were an Uber driver and got a check for $153, I think I'd complain about that and take a step further and put something on the internet that shows my $153 versus the $25 million.
Well, I got to believe if you go beyond, too much far beyond 84, I mean, again, Uber can't have that deep of pockets, right? Eventually, you put them out of business, right?
Eventually, but is that the goal? To court sometime.
Is that the goal here? Eventually, put them out, or all of a sudden, if they can come back to the well again.
Well, as the Wall Street calls it, it's a shakedown. What an implication! What an implication!
You're giving me flashbacks. You were mentioning a few weeks ago the Rodney Dangerfield Back to School movie, Jack, and the real world versus what it's like for the economics professor, right? So paybacks and payoffs and everything else that are kind of going on. That's not the ways of the legitimate business world. Well, you know what?
That's the real world. That's the world where we live in.
Right. Well, that's what this sounds like here, doesn't it?
That's correct.
So it's being done by the lawyers. The courts aren't even part of this now. It's just the lawyers doing this kind of stuff, making this start to happen and force them to sell. Where's Uber's lawyers on this? What are those guys getting paid?
Well, they're the ones who said, hey, let's settle.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, they're making them write a check to these guys. You guys pay the lawyer's fee.
Well, the article talks about other companies that can't pay like Uber did.
Yeah, you said that there was like 8 or 12 of them that all of a sudden they're forced out of business, right?
That's right. They talked about one, a small business that was forced into bankruptcy because they...
On the same topic as far as independent contractors or something else?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I don't remember.
But yeah, your point, it's all of a sudden they come in here and stick the guns at them and say, here you go, here's a shakedown.
Yeah.
It's crazy, right?
It sure is. Yes, this was a house cleaning service called Home Joy.
Okay.
It was shut down last summer because of a legal assault, and they can't afford the ransom that they're referring to here.
I can say most companies can. It's a great way for them to put them out of business, and that's not doing well for anybody. You know, we've been fans of Uber since the early years when we became aware of it here in the last couple of years. I think it's a great idea. I mean, it's entrepreneurship at its best.
I think most people feel that way. Yeah.
So they're filling a need. Again, the laws of supply and demand. So interesting. Okay. Well, I like that. You know, it's always good to hear what's on your mind, Jack, because often in this case, you have a how-come question that I have other how-come questions to go along with it. It doesn't make sense to me. So we try to make sense of these things along the way. I'm sure you've got some how-comes out there as well. We're looking forward to you sharing here as the weeks go by. All right. Stay tuned. In our next segment, we're going to share our small business success story of the week. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners. We'll be there 24/7 to coach you and chart your path to business success.
Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners, MVP. We're your small business coaches. We understand that larger companies don't have the same challenges that smaller businesses face on a daily basis. So we have made it our passion to understand what makes small businesses work.
All right, in our segment here today, we're going to touch on a small business success story. And the small word, when we talk about small, is 1 to 25 employees. That's the kind of companies that we deal with. And when we share stories, it's going to be those kind of companies. We know there are millions of them around the country. And we'd like to share just a few of them because they don't get a lot of spotlights as they should. And there's some fantastic stories out there.
This is one of our clients, too, wasn't it?
Yes. It was, yes.
Yeah, which that's where our stories draw from.
Well, we've got going on 14 years together here, Jack. We got all kinds of stories to draw from. And, this is the kind of stuff that you can't make it up. Yeah, it's got to be true because, people don't.
Yeah. 14 years. Most people aren't married 14 years.
I know
years.
They are.
Holy
it's amazing,
crap.
Right?
Yeah.
Too many shakedowns in between, right? I don't know. All right.
Probably.
So part of what we like to try to do, too, is when we talk about our success story, we like to frame it within how we look at the world between our three circles and our seven keys to success. So this small business success story is going to be focusing on the marketing aspect of things in terms of just understanding marketing. So let me paint the situation for you here before we get started. So the question our client had, some of the challenge he was dealing with was, how do you get more predictable cash flow and grow by adding more locations? How do you fund all this growth so it happens as fast as you'd like? We were just talking about that earlier, weren't we?
About as fast as you'd like. That's a good example you have here.
All right, so we had this client, and the business model was such that it was that every month starting over, they didn't have predictable cash. They weren't sure how to get that happening. So it's almost like being a car salesman. You have a great month, and it's like, okay, the calendar switches pages, and you're starting from ground zero again. So one of the things that we often encourage our clients to do is to go look at acquiring another company. Talk to competitors in your business. We are constantly amazed at how people are afraid to go talk to their competition.
That's right.
They're deathly afraid. And a lot of the excuses we'll hear, or the reasons why we'll hear, is, well, gee, I don't want to let out the secret about this or the secret about that. And it's like, come on.
They're all disguises for that lack of confidence and know-how to go approach not only competitors, but just other small businesses. It's an amazing world.
Yeah, I think it comes back to, you mentioned the confidence. It's knowing, okay, what do I say to that person, right? How do I approach that person? And so we will put this all under the big guise of market research or marketing. Looking to acquire companies is marketing, because marketing is going to help drive sales, drive growth of the company. And it's one of those areas that's often overlooked. And so to go look and acquire a company, and this is a great example of how, even though he didn't acquire the company he went and looked at, it came back with a great idea for him. A couple of great ideas for him, actually, okay? And the first one was, he went in to talk to this owner, and his business was set up as such, he would have hour-long sessions, and people would pay in chunks. They'd buy a session here, they'd buy multiple sessions there to kind of meet with our client. And what this competitor was doing was, he had 3-month or 6-month or 12-month contracts. The idea being that they'll commit to a certain amount of time, and every month they'd get charged a certain fee for being part of that. So wait a minute, that's nice predictable cash flow, right? Not only that, this guy also offered the idea, so instead of doing things in 1-hour sessions, how about doing them in 1/2-hour sessions? You charge a little more for that, versus what would be just half of the hour, but you charge a little more for that. But here's another opportunity. So he found this couple opportunities just from this one discussion from this guy, right? So now, these aren't trade secrets. This is not like this guy invented the idea of doing this subscription-based model, or kind of buying a membership almost to a certain extent. So it wasn't like he was going against any sort of confidentiality. He was just, hey, this is a good idea. Great
That's
idea.
Right.
I can take it and put it back into my business.
Well, so many small business owners are again, afraid to engage. So those kinds of thoughts and practices are never known to them. So it's, and the reason that so many people don't do it, they're afraid on the other side of giving out too much information and creating all these competitors, and I'm going to go out of business. That's just total nonsense. It doesn't work that way. Even in our 7 keys to success, we'll gladly give those out to anyone who wants them. And basically, they're free to do what they want with them. But our experience shows they aren't going to get too far with those unless they're our coaching client. We're working in this partnership to develop those. So that's good information. There's a lot of good information out there. But opening up and going after it, that's what seems to be missing by so many of these small business owners.
And if I recall, it wasn't like we talked to our client about this and going to talk to competitors. He's like, oh, that's the greatest idea ever. And he went the next day and did it. It was, as many things there are, we talk about it numerous times. And it was over a few months, he finally said, okay, our clients had to be ready to hear a suggestion.
That's
even though
right.
We've said it numerous times, many have told us, I know you've told me this 18 times before, but I was ready to hear it today. So he was ready to hear it that day. And so this is about 5 years ago when he finally made that jump to go talk to this guy, right? So he went from zero predictable cash flow. We were just talking about this actually last week with him. And it's over half his revenue now. It's predictable each month. He knows coming in from each month, he's not coming in at zero each month. He's coming in, he's got more than half that revenue. It's already in there. You can see it. people that are on those contracts of 3 months or 6 months or 12-month contract.
That's transformed his attitude, his confidence, everything. Everything about his business now.
That's right. He's very calmed down, right? So that was one of the questions when I set up the framing. So how do I get more predictable cash flow? And the second part he was trying to figure out was how do I grow by adding more locations? When we met him, he had one location. He was trying to grow multiple locations here. And so early on, he added a second location when we were with him, and then he's looking to add a third location. And it became pretty daunting. Jack was mentioning before about the idea of starting a company versus buying a company, right? And how much easier it can be when you have something that you buy a company versus starting from scratch. Well, opening a new location, it's kind of like starting from scratch. Even though he'd been around for a number of years, he's new in this location. So he had to get the location set up, and you get a lease signed up, and you get to fill up the...
A lot of uncertainty.
Fill up the
That's
building,
right.
Get people... It's all kinds of things that kind of go with that, right? So again, here I'll come back to the marketing and market research. So part of what we have him do is looking at competitors. And he would dutifully start to do this. You know, and part of his downtime, he's constantly looking at competitors. And it came one day and said, hey, you know what? XYZ company is over here at a rec center doing some stuff over there. Interesting. Okay, well, let's investigate that a little bit. Investigated a little bit. And in the meantime, he also got a phone call from another guy who was setting up a location and wanted their company to come in and service his account. So all of a sudden, he's hearing things in the marketplace, thinking, hey, what's going on here? Maybe there's some other opportunities out there that maybe I wasn't even thinking about. So instead of focusing on trying to add a new location, being a physical new location from a startup standpoint, what he started to evolve it into here in the last couple of years is going to look at things that are already set up. In his case, it was recreation centers.
And that leads to even opening up further about looking for opportunities and partners, ideas to combine your talents with somebody else's talents, and the two coming together, or the three coming together, make a whole that's very, very desirable in the marketplace. That's a sort of sophisticated thinking that evolves. I mean, we see it right away when we start with somebody. But to Adam's point, it sometimes takes years before the light goes on in their mind. And that says a lot about the small business owner and how trapped he is in his own perceptions of what's going on.
All right, so this particular client, as you might have guessed by now, it's a personal training company, okay? And so what happened was, when he discovered this idea about, going into recreation centers and providing the service for them, he'd already opened a third location, and we helped him get introduced to the folks in that city, and he started talking to them about this. Now, this other person who had called him to ask about, setting up maybe to help do services, didn't work out, but he had created a model they thought would work pretty well. And going very different from like going to open location where you're paying rent for something, he went in and said, hey, I'll give you a percentage of the revenue. So if I'm making money, you're making money. And it worked very, very well. And he was able to close down his other location that was in the same town and transfer the business over to that rec center and grew very, very well. Because there's a need in the rec centers. The rec centers didn't have this kind of service in place where they weren't doing it well. And he just opened their second location now. And he's got on the drawing board for two more here in the next year or so. So he's going to get those locations set up, but it's going to be in a different way than he originally thought about it, because he went out and was doing his market research to see this, to see what was going to happen. And so he's taking what often would be a fixed cost, rent, utilities, all things that go into having a fixed location, and has made it totally variable. So again, to come back to Jack's point before, in terms of now having the predictable cash flow for a good chunk of his business and not having fixed costs, but having variable costs, it's amazing the night and day transformation of this owner in the last 5 years.
Well,
what he's been able to do.
He's breaking records right now. So that's the success factor.
That's right. It's a fantastic, fantastic story. So we like to be able to highlight these stories as part of what we do here on Dirty Secrets of Small Business. And so we do appreciate you joining us for this week's edition of Dirty Secrets of Small Business. We invite you to tune in every Monday at noon. If you have questions before our next show, you can email them to radio@MaximumVP.com, post them at facebook.com/MaximumVP, or call us at 877-849-0670. That's 877-849-0670.
At Maximum Value Partners, we work hard to build long-term relationships and become not only your valued advisors, but also your trusted friends. If you're looking to be a successful, knowledgeable business owner, to take your company anywhere that you want to go, we can help.